Welcome, everyone. I'm Marilyn Stern, Associate Fellow with the Forum, and I'll be your chair. We're pleased to welcome Raymond Stock, a Shulman Ginsberg Writing Fellow at the Forum, who will be discussing Egypt's political crisis. Mr. Stock, a U.S. academic who lived in Egypt from 1990 to 2010, has written extensively on Egypt and the Middle East. Our previous conference call at the end of May discussed Egypt on the brink of economic ruin, leaving us with the question of how Egypt would survive Morsi's incompetence. To discuss the answers today, Mr. Stock will give us an up-to-date of Egypt. Mr. Stock?
Hi. Thanks very much for the introduction, and thanks for inviting me to speak today. I would like to say, just to address the subject of your last conference call briefly, and this is at the heart of what I'm really trying to say about Morsi and his regime and what led to the situation we're now in, was that Morsi was not so much incompetent as he was focused on other things. The Muslim Brotherhood has fallen in Egypt because they chose to emphasize the complete takeover of society and the complete indoctrination and insertion of Islamist ideology and ideologues in every part of Egyptian society, above and beyond any attempt to fix the economy or to make the society work any more effectively. So they basically were in a hurry to consolidate their base. And in so doing, they totally alienated a lot of other people in Egypt. Every single institution in Egypt that had operated on a different basis for the last 60 years was completely infuriated and alienated. And most importantly, the army and the judiciary. And also, of course, the media. Because even though they attempted to control the media, they didn't have full control over the Internet, obviously. So they really could not stop people from dissenting. What is really quite extraordinary, however, is the size of the size and the willingness to risk life and limb on the streets, the size of the demonstrations, and the fact that so many people have made this a carnival, in fact, there's safety in numbers, perhaps. But they have all come out against, I mean, the majority, 7-1 on the streets against the Muslim Brotherhood right now. And this is something which it totally dwarfs anything which has happened not only in Egypt, but as far as I can tell, anywhere else in the world in terms of popular demonstrations about anything. And in Egypt, it's the idea of rising up against the ruler and these numbers is something which has only been tried a few times and has only worked a few times. In fact, the only time it really worked at all was truly apart from an incident in 1805, or 1811, when Muhammad Ali was able to get rid of 1805, get rid of the Turkish governor by instigating popular uprising against him, they really have not been able to do anything until on a popular level until the overthrow of Mubarak in 2011, and that was only because the army was on their side. And once again, the army was on the people's side, on the majority of people's side. It's not even clear that the majority of people opposed Mubarak, but certainly there was an agitated minority that was pretty sizable. And the majority of other people were just, I think, apathetic. Now, however, Morsi, not through his incompetence, but through his focus on consolidation as opposed to reforming the economy and putting people back to work and getting the police back on the streets and basically picking up where the revolution left off in 2011 and putting Egypt back on its feet. It chose to, out of a fear perhaps from having been out of power for 84 years trying to get into power, fear of losing it too soon, they actually hastened that outcome by trying too hard to prevent it. They made it a self-fulfilling prophecy. And that's where we are right now. However, we're not necessarily in a post-Islamist Egypt for two reasons. Obviously, the Muslim Brotherhood still exists. Its Salafi allies still exist. They were able to get at their flood tide 75% of the votes in Egypt in 2011 and 12, by the presidential elections of June 2012, or May. The president was declared in June. The winner was declared at the end of June. The majority had dropped considerably. In fact, it was just a plurality. So about half the eligible electorate voted, and one half of them, slightly more than one half of them, if you can believe the vote tally, voted for Morsi. And an even smaller percentage of people voted for the referendum, the constitutional referendum, in favor of the changes, the new constitution that was put forward by the Islamists in December of last year. So that only really about, out of a total electorate, 36% of them voted, and of them, 65% voted for the referendum, if you can believe the votes, voted for the constitution. So they were gradually dropping, in fact, rather rapidly dropping in popularity, primarily not for ideological reasons, but for economic reasons. And because of their style, not the substance, but the style of their governance. And that is that they seem to be so dictatorial. They seem to be so unwilling to listen to anyone. And the only reason they were overthrown, aside from the popular outrage, the only reason the army actually joined those crowds, besides its feeling impelled to prevent the chaos by acting somehow decisively to end the crisis, was that I think that because Morsi was endangering the Islamist project, in the long run, I think this is more and more what I've come to believe, that he was really a threat to Islamism in Egypt because he was trying too hard to consolidate too quickly. And the general Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, who is now the real strongman running the country, he's an Islamist who I think was fearful that this whole project would be blown by the Muslim Brotherhood. That's why he never really liked the Muslim Brotherhood. He felt that he could not trust them. And he was himself, I think, closer to the Anur party, which is a Salafi party. And the Salafis themselves were apolitical prior to Mubarak's fall. They were quietists. They wanted to transform society quietly in a more Islamist direction. And Sisi himself wrote a thesis while he was coming up in the ranks to describe his views of governments as a kind of Islamist democracy. So he wants a democratic government, at least with all the normal institutions of democracy, but with an Islamist basis. So we're not necessarily in a post-Islamist phase. We are in a reformed Islamism phase, possibly along the Pakistani model. So, however, he did appoint an all-secular government, or he allowed Hazem al-Bablawi, the new interim president, I'm sorry, the new interim prime minister, to appoint a cabinet which is entirely secularist. However, he also insisted upon preserving the most Islamist parts of the old constitution that they are suspending, that had been put forward through Morsi's efforts. As I mentioned last December, they have kept the essential Sharia elements that was so dangerous in that particular document. I'm not sure if they're going to keep one of the elements that is most dangerous, which is that the Sharia will no longer be interpreted by the state, but by the laws to be made Sharia compliant will be no longer assessed by the state or interpreted by the state, but interpreted by clerics, which is, of course, therefore effectively clerical rule. How this is all going to play out, no one can really say. But it's not clear to me that, even though Tamarit was a secularist group that led the uprising this time, it's not clear how much control they have over the agenda. And we could be heading into an entirely new phase of a kind of, as Robert Springwar wrote recently, a kind of hybrid of Islamism and hybrid system of Islamism and militarism, which would be more along the Pakistani model. So I'd like to stop there and